All right, everybody, are we ready to get started today? It's 4:30. I'll try and make this as quick as I can, because if you're like me, you want to get out of here. But I'm hoping our topic today is going to be fun, and it's also going to be good for us all to walk through. This will be a presentation slash comedy. I try and mix comedy in as much as I humanly can with what we've done. So my name is Alan Scott. I work with HCA. I'm here with Todd Rivers today, who's a Microsoft PFE field engineer, and we're here to talk about clinical integration and how to get BizTalk to process 25 million messages a day. I do realize that's not on your agenda, and I can only apologize for that, but we did submit that topic. So to get us started, before we can really talk, we got to do the legal thing. Lawyers demand it, that we're not going to recommend anybody buy the product. We're only going to tell you how we have used the technology to do very clinically innovative things. So if you go out and purchase it and you say HCA said to, that never happened. I represent HCA. I've been there 5 years. Phenomenal company. I don't say that because they pay me well and I enjoy what I do, but it is a great company to work for. Founded in 1968. I pulled this all off of our website, so if you want to check, I even gave us credit, so no one could say I tried anything illegitimate. We own 160 plus hospitals. Everybody can take a laugh because that number does fluctuate, believe it or not. But if I'm looking at the future, I think that number will start to go up. We own 113 freestanding surgery centers plus. We list ourselves in 20 states, but for everybody that's here that is with HCA, we know we're in more than that, so I don't really understand that. And we also have a huge physician practice management part of our organization as well, which is not listed. So we also own primary care physicians and specialty physicians along with those surgery centers. As I said, I'm Alan Scott. I've been doing integration for 15 years, certified at multiple products, love what I do, enjoy it a lot. I'm with Todd Rivers, Microsoft Premier Field Engineer. He's been using BizTalk for years, and we at HCA are lucky to have him help us, because without Microsoft's Premier Field Engineers, when we've gone through some of the content that everyone will see, you'll be like, how did you accomplish that? That's impossible. And then we're going to get to all kinds of fun questions that everybody's going to have, and hopefully we'll be able to answer all of them today. Next slide. So what I wanted to do is, before we get to the fun stuff, is do a level set. Who has used any other integration engine besides BizTalk for HL7? Okay. All right. Who has done BizTalk HL7 since 2004? Okay. 2010. Who's on the cusp of 2013? All right, we got, good. Microsoft guys, raise his hand. Good job.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, great work. So what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about our hardware, some of the solutions we've built, our volume, and then the future state of BizTalk at HCA and where we believe we're headed as an organization. So from a hardware perspective, our BizTalk environment runs on VMware 5.0. It's completely virtualized. The only part of our servers that are physical are our database servers. We have 5 dedicated ESX hosts for all the processing, all the volume, all the things you're going to see that happen. And our largest VM is 4 vProcs with 16 gig of RAM. That's done some by the SMND group that manages us limiting, and the other one is that's done by us because we don't want to have VMs that can effectively overrun and cause issues. We've also implemented vMotion to assist us. And the interesting part about the vMotion implementation is, if you know HL7, you know that, well, once a server goes down, that connection goes away. We've actually had numerous instances, well into the dozen range, where vMotion has kicked in. We have not lost HL7 connectivity, and we've actually moved physical servers and been able to process messages. So we're very happy with how that's been going. Next is our EMC implementation. We do everything with EMC SAN. Now, I am not a SAN person, so if anybody has any questions later, I'm going to call on other people, because not my realm of expertise. But I do know we use the vMAX 40K platform. We use FSIP cards, as you can see. We have gigabyte connectivity. And the key thing about the SAN, I think, is important for everybody to understand, is we use it with DOR, which is the data at rest encryption, which means if you think about it, with as much volume as we push, everything on those drives is constantly encrypted. I think that's pretty impressive from a SAN perspective. Now some numbers of baseline. 18 months ago when we started our journey, we had no biz talk, a donut, nothing. Fat guy can make jokes about food, I will go for donuts. Today we have 36 production virtual machines running, 24/7. That equates to 4 groups with 9 servers in each group. Our average CPU is 64% across any CPU doing any tasking. Everything you're gonna see was built with 5 developers and 3 support engineers. I wanna be clear about a number. The number 5 happened only after we deployed our first 30 applications. We grew from a group of 3. Our support was the number 1 up until recently, when we've implemented an onshore, offshore model for supporting us 24/7. And as you'll see, the number of applications is actually probably low because we've been deploying stuff this week, but we stand at 42 on or about. Our existing BizTalk solution was built to support one effort for the organization for all of our hospitals. It's called CDM. That's clinical data management. And it was meant to feed numerous vendor systems to do EMPI, to do data standardization, to put data in a clinical data warehouse, and eventually to feed a data system that resides in Teradata. So that's where the need came from. Now, if you look at the logical view of our environment, in order to do that, we basically had to go to a map of the United States, pull up our facilities, and say, how can we logically group all of our servers so that we can get them to process? We basically came up and said, 4 is good because it's even, and it rounds well with 140-ish, and it will help us. And then obviously, as anybody would do, once you get over 5 messages, you better have multiple database instances for BizTalk. Now the numbers. Our average daily volume sits around 23 million. That number can go up and it can go down, but on average, we'll go with a low number of 23 million a day. Now, I want to point out, when we look at the average number, that does not cherry pick and double count volume. That is a business message that came in, that was processed by BizTalk, that went to a defined endpoint. So that's not like, oh, I do a bunch of auditing in 20 steps and I'm going to count that to raise up my volume. Our highest volume we've ever processed in a single day, 24 hours, has been 49.7 million transactions. Again, one message comes in, a whole lot of stuff comes out. If you look at the 23 million on average, that means our volume per second, any second of the day, is 266 messages. So as you can imagine, we talked about hardware, that any second we're down is going to cause a issue. We have been down for minutes, hours, and sometimes even days. MLLP connections. We have 1,900 24/7 HL7 connections that run. Now, we're going to go to the next number. We performance tested BizTalk, and we got, with a system that we stood up with no latency, no delay, processing as fast as we could, 160 messages a second. Todd didn't believe it. I didn't believe it. Product development didn't believe it, so we did it again. After the third time, we decided to call it a morning at 4 a.m. and said, that's our number. Because again, 160, 170, that's a lot amongst friends, right? In our current environment, we also process over 100 plus files. At the same time, we're doing HL7 in those groups. And we also have 6 direct database connections, 16 direct database connections that process transactions to and from BizTalk. Additionally, we have 1,320 plus, because we've been deploying this week, host instances that exist across our platform to keep moving data. So So I go ahead. That's fine.
You want to stay back and go back?
No, that's fine. So as we talk about our CDM solution and the reason that we went with BizTalk, one of the key things is, well, why'd you do it? That's a good question. Because when I started, I was 200 pounds and a model. I swear to God. Yeah. I swear to God. The solution was so great, I've been in the hospital 3 or 4 times testing it out myself. But what we had was a defined need, and we needed a platform that could not just move HL7, but that could allow us to build assets that were repeatable, reusable, and processable by others other than us. So we said, well, we can go out and we can look at the ensembles. We can look at the Cloverleafs, which we also have an infrastructure for. We can look at the Rhapsodies. We're still left with the question, what do I do if I have a need for a custom component that I have to write? Because the core question comes down to, it's not just HL7 anymore, it's somebody will want to do something else with that. Someone will want to audit that transaction. Someone will want to extend that. Someone's going to want to request that same data. And if I really have to set up another endpoint, good God, I'm going to go crazy. So when we looked at CDM, one of the things we said is, can we get an integration platform that we can leverage, that we can extend, that we could turn around and take 160 facilities, 1,700 plus connections, and consolidate those down without doing any hokey internal HL7 to 160 to 200 connections? Can that be done? Now, I will be the first to tell you the reason that that had to be done was some vendors couldn't sustain 2,000 connections in their platform. But the longer I sat there as the enterprise architect for HCA, the more I said, this gives us an opportunity unlike any other in the industry. This gives us a chance at a logical level to transactionally identify and process our data into processing areas. Because let's be honest, we've all done HL7, whoever's done HL7, and moved data point to point. That's not really fun. The ability for us to take an HL7 message that comes in, consolidate it without writing a single line of code, put it into MSMQ in a regional model, and then have one connection out for all those messages in order to process to an endpoint, reduced our management, our administration, our load, and all the internal processing that would have to be done with those other technologies. And it also introduced us to the fact of how extensible that information was. Because now we've got that data at an endpoint. I don't ever have to go back if I don't choose to that source system. I can now add new systems. I can build applications. I can build logic sets and do things, which we'll talk about in our future state. So I think this is a big thing to know. Notice, for those of you that do HL7, full acknowledgement, full ACNAT capability, full tracking, going into the platform. Next slide. So everybody looks at it and says, hey, I read the HL7 developer's guide from BizTalk. That ain't it. That's right, it's not. What we found under testing, under volume, and under process is that we could not, with our volume, and this is not a knock on the technology, just is a state of being, process on and do everything in a singleton manner. We had to have a means to get data in, to do that consolidation, and to put it in a place to effectively get it out of BizTalk, right? Because we'll talk about that in some of the terms that we all use. So we basically implemented the model that takes an HL7 message in, publishes it to the message box. There's a subscription to the MSMQ that it goes to with logic there, so it'll know how to route the message. Then it'll pump that message back in. It's transactional, so one at a time, back out to those receiving applications. Now everybody's going to say, hey, you're going to have out-of-order messages, and we could talk about that at the end and how that is and what we're doing and how Microsoft's actually enabling us to continue that to go forward. Ready for the next one? So, with where we are today, well, what we've done with CDM, we've implemented the solution, we started, we built it, we said, okay, it's been somewhat of a success. We've had stumbles, we've had to figure things out, we've had Microsoft helping us, and we've had a lot of late nights. Like I said, I was 200 pounds. Now you see what happens. But what we realized is the ability of the platform, the capabilities that it gave us beyond HL7 were far greater than even I anticipated, far greater than I could think we could take the platform. So the question is, what are you going to do next? Can you use it next? Is there a potential to use it next in the clinical space? So as we looked at it, we actually looked at our processing and we said, you know, some of the things we do awful are we stink at testing. It's not like we're bad. It's not like we're awful. We just stink at it. Because I got to go get a tester, then I got to go get a scenario, then I got to go find somebody else, and then somebody has to clinically validate it. Well, how do we do that, and how do we keep going with our applications so we don't lose that? And how do we say when we're ready to cut over that it's the testing services group to do testing, but we want to be able to test our code? So we looked around, we thought, how are we going to do this? And we came up with something called the clinical services bus. So when we talk about the future of BizTalk for us, clinical services bus, nice title, nifty, what does it really mean? Because you got service bus in there. It means a lot of stuff to a lot of people. What we looked at was a means and a way that we could take data and based on the data, give end users without knowledge of the detailed messages, the ability to say, I want to be able to route a message from a facility to multiple locations this way. Database lookup, basically, there's a form they fill out, they go in, they save it, submit it. When messages process through, he will route it one to many, guaranteed, and it's all based on clinical data because it happens near real time. We're extending this a little further because we're actually in the process of automating the pulling of the message files that come off of the environments and readying them so that there'll be a Windows service behind the scenes that can take a user request, process it, ready it, and then guess what happens? BizTalk takes an entire day's message file, processes it through. And what have we done? We've reduced our developers and we've been able to keep them focused on development, not like, oh, let's go grab a file, let's copy it to a directory, let's do this process. Another thing we looked at was if we have these capabilities and we have this platform and we keep extending it, what's the future in healthcare? Strategically, where's healthcare going? What am I going to be able to use this for elsewise? I mean, anybody familiar with meaningful use knows what that means? Bet you if I say Obamacare, everybody goes, whoa. This ain't it. That's not Obamacare. This actually works. Ha ha. So meaningful use is the government effectively, and I'm going to simplify it, saying to everyone, certain things you have to do. You have to be able to exchange information. You have to do it in a common way. And the most important one is you got to let us know when people are really sick, we're having outbreaks, or there's registry events going on. What's a registry event? Your child getting an immunization. A cancer registry is an event. A heart attack could be an event. At the end of the day, where they're going slowly with meaningful use is the government wants to know about certain conditions that happen. It's not like they have a big data center that they're sitting there looking at everybody's clinical information because, let's be honest, they're not. And if they are, trust me, they're stuck on my clinical records for years. But the meaningful use, too, was a way we could look at and say, what do other vendors have? And do we really want to buy something from another vendor that we have to pay consultants to come in and configure and then work through? So we did evaluations of several platforms that existed. We came to the conclusion that those platforms were good, but they needed a lot of work. And at the end of the day, they still had to go get them certified. What we decided to do, and we did this in 4 months, from start to conclusion, we built a Meaningful Use 2 platform. What that means is we process electronic labs, immunizations, and syndromic surveillance events. Syndromic surveillance, if you think about it, is mad cow disease outbreak. We process that through BizTalk. We use the business rules engine. And we take the same concept we did with the clinical services bus, and we say, let's get down into the clinical metadata of this message and determine if it's a transaction that needs to be routed, where it needs to be routed, and make sure, above all else, we audit it, because it is going out to government agencies. We did that. We got that certified with Drummond, which is the national group that certifies products, last month. And I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud of what the team was able to do. Because if you think about it, everybody that's here that's a manager or that's running a platform says, well, it's going to take us years to figure that out, months to do it. We have 4 months. We burned all our time looking at everybody else's solution and trying to figure out what we were going to do. And then also, let's be honest, we had to figure out how we were not going to have a meaningful use problem with the government. Because they basically, once you start, you can't stop. So you got to keep going forward. Other things we looked at were, you know, we have a need to get data from other sources because our BizTalk platform is going to continue to grow. It's going to continue to process messages. And let's be honest, the adapters either aren't there or I don't know if I want to go to a third party. I like investing in Microsoft because they're $50 billion. I don't know about some companies that aren't so much. So we evaluated some. And since we use Teradata as a data platform so much for our meaningful use platform, we decided to get crazy and start writing our own adapter effectively for Teradata. Because we know we're going there once, and we know we're probably going to go there several other times. The other adapters that we're looking at, that we're considering, so that doesn't mean we're doing them, but we're strongly considering, are service-based solutions to look at getting data out of Meditech more real-time than HL7 message, and Epic. If you've ever heard, I don't know if you've heard of Epic or not, but it's basically an InterSystems cache database. So we're thinking of ways that we could potentially leverage that to get data out so we don't have to be stuck in the, oh, we only have HL7 fields, what if I need something else? Because at the fundamental end, with BizTalk, what do you have? You have an HL7 message that moves through. I have access to information in the HL7 message. I can build business processes. I can connect to systems. What separates us from connecting to the system? Just code, right? And obviously, I'm not saying insert data into anybody's database because that violates every license agreement ever written, but a select statement doesn't, if you've done your due diligence and legal processes. So, when we look at solution enhancements and we look at the things that we're doing and how we're growing, what I started to talk about with the, I started talking about the clinical services bus and the other solutions is we took the approach that we're going to use what's in the platform. We're not going to buy third party anything. We're going to see what it can do. Because Microsoft said, hey, we've got these great tools. We got BAM, we got ESB, we got BRE, and we got BizTalk, right? All together as a platform. Factoring the others out, we said, Business Rules Engine is intriguing. It's very intriguing because it allows us to be able to give clinicians the ability to talk in a language that they'll understand. Because let's be honest, nobody wants to hear me talk about, hey, let's have a conversation about what's in PV19, because that's an awesome topic. No, what they want to know is, what is gender? What is location? What is physician type? All those things that matter in a language that means something to them. So what we decided to do is take the work on to make those things happen. So what we built is, through our enterprise services, we build a UI, like I stated before, that enables people to process transaction rules. Then the BRE gets fed those with the common API. And from that API, real-time decisions get made. Now notice, there's no difference between the clinical service bus and what we've done for our meaningful use product because they leverage the same technology. All we've done is give them different rule sets, give them different processes and different meanings and enablement. So this, again, is a way that we took the core technologies delivered and we said, how are we going to be able to possibly leverage all these things and produce platforms and, again, produce a solution that is going to be able to go out to facilities. Now, everyone will look at this and everybody will say, well, that's a lot of work. You know, the price tag for us to build this, I don't know because I'm an IT guy, right? It's cool, I don't care, buy it. But I can tell you, competing products were in the millions of dollars and they didn't have this capability, right? It was all, nothing dynamic, everything coded, everything at the time it happened. So, with all that being said, you did all this, Alan. Everything went rosy, right? Because you're up here really bragging on Microsoft. Oh, no. No. I had 6 kidney stones in 8 weeks. No kidding. I swear to God. I was actually coding on my laptop after a kidney stone procedure because I had to drink so much coffee to stay awake with the platform. But after we got through, when you're able to reflect and you're able to look at what did we do good and what did we not do so good, which is an honest question, right? You have to ask yourself that. You take a step back and you say, I learned the value of BizTalk has POCs. What that means is you need to do proof of concepts on what the BizTalk technology is to make sure it meets your needs. The reason why is because it's a big platform. Do you think you have to do a proof of concept in a technology where you connect two point-to-point systems? No. The reason why? That's a pretty, hey, I got them connected. Data's flowing. Rules work or they don't work for data flow, right? BizTalk, a much different animal. So you do proof of concepts. You also need to understand the value of third-party tools. What that means is you have things like the deployment framework. You have things like, I think they call it the solution factory now, right? BizTalk solution factory. Your message box viewer utility, which you will become one with if you move heavy volumes, are all invaluable. They were all built by people that are rangers or in the field using the technology, and they have incredible value. Why would you want to have somebody create 8 solutions or 8 projects when you can click a button and hit next and have it done for you? That's kind of silly, and it follows a best practice. You have succeeded at following a best practice by downloading a tool, entering data in a box, and hitting next. Job well done. You have to design your systems for very slow receiving systems, awfully slow receiving systems. It's not a knock on any receiving system out there, because you'll always hear BizTalk folks say, can you slow that system? Can you speed it up? No. The fact is, you have to design your systems for that ability to be very slow, which means effectively, when you look at 2013, Windows Service Bus, MSMQ, you're gonna have to get some means and way of saying, how can I slow the platform down where it doesn't take a gob of people to have to manage it for me? You have to design your systems for what I call volume plus, because that means at the end of the day, that you're going to have a situation where you're going to be down or someone's going to be down, and here comes additional volume. Everybody likes to always say, hey, how many messages are you expecting? We did that. We never asked the second question of, what do we do when those guys go down for 3 days for an upgrade? I don't know. We tell everybody at the hospitals, don't admit anybody. CEO won't like that answer, but you have to design your system to be capable of doing that, which means you can't just go in and say, I've got $200,000. What do I get for it? You have to say, here's your volume, here's how much it is today, and what is that factor that I'm comfortable with so I can sleep at night, because the processors, they're non-human. They'll continue to work, but I get a chance to sleep. You need to understand the value, you need to understand the mindset that BizTalk people have that have been doing it for years of do it somewhere else except BizTalk. Who's heard that? Come on. Come on. Somebody who said that? You said, that's Guru. He runs the product. He's like, why are you doing that in BizTalk? I don't know, Guru. Why are we? But at the end of the day, the mindset of the technology is, the way it's stated is wrong. It's not getting it out of BizTalk. It's BizTalk is an engine that is super fast, doing many things. So you either have to design your BizTalk implementation to slow down incredibly, or you have to look at alternatives. And there are some cases where I will be the first to say, we might not have done everything right inside of our BizTalk implementation, but as anybody that's here from Microsoft will tell you, the going in factor was, we are using BizTalk. And when you tell us, Greg Guru, that it's not supposed to be used in BizTalk, we'll go to another platform. So I kind of didn't really negotiate well, I just kind of, an overall statement. The other value you need to have is you need to understand the importance of tuning and its necessity, right? This means that my BizTalk server isn't running well. I work with people all day long, and they call me the BizTalk data whisperer because it's always this explanation of BizTalk isn't processing well. Well, what does that mean? That's like saying, hey, Alan, go run a 4-minute mile. I'll drive it. I'm not going to run it. Right? You have to understand what that means and why it's important and how to do it adequately. In order to do that, you have to understand the importance and the value of performance counters and what they mean and where they're valuable and where they're not. I'll give you a very specific example. If you're to look at the HL7 performance counter, and you're looking at it and you're saying, hey, it's not moving. That's right, it's not, because it doesn't. It's a point-in-time performance indicator. But if you think, hey, I know all the performance indicators, and you don't know that little detail, you will get a very false picture about what's going on inside of BizTalk. And the worst part is you're going to make a tuning mistake. You need to understand MLOP message adapter behavior. One of the things you saw that we did was we actually built a system where we have two singletons, MSMQ transient, MLLP. The reason we did that is because we're going to take that chance to ensure that we can do single message delivery and be able to process those messages and be able to work through them. Now, if you have the mindset that BizTalk is like MSMQ is like SQL, not a chance in the world. Who here has ever let 2.5 million messages sit in BizTalk? Ever? Oh, come on, we do that all the time. You and me, man, we do it all the time. That's where the fun begins. Don't ever do it with HL7, though, good God. But we do it all the time with MSMQ. We do it all the time with SQL Server, because that engine can handle that process. But that's what I mean. It's not that the HL7 adapter is awful. It's just not, that's not its intention. It's designed as I connect to something, I send, I get data back, I'm out of here, have a nice day. The last thing I would say from a lessons learned perspective that we're in the midst of doing is set yourself up in a lab environment. Have an ongoing process. Do not, and I can only tell you, do not just say, hey, I want a lab, a QA environment, a dev environment, and a production environment. If you do any volume, you do any pushing, you want to test anything, you will find yourself environmentally short really quickly. And then if you have the Microsoft Premier contracts and the premier engineers, you're left in a bind because you're fighting for environment space, fighting for transactions, fighting to get those things, and it leaves you in a bad place being able to figure out and resolve issues potentially. Where does our future take us? If you look at this, it's kind of your traditional three-box model that everybody gets in BizTalk gets tested on. Receives, sends, database, right? The reason we're evaluating and looking at doing this is because of our volume. It's also because, as you've seen, the platform has gone well beyond just CDM. We're now supporting 3 to 4 clear solutions in the platform, and we're looking at growing that beyond that. So we can no longer have that solution that was built was for that platform. We have potentially hundreds more HL7 connections in, hundreds more outbound, and here's the thing. In our organization, we deal in things in tens of thousands and tens of millions. So we know our volume is going to go through the roof. So how do I do that, and how do I enable a platform? And here's the other great thing about BizTalk. If you look up here and you say, that looks interesting. With BizTalk, I'm able to say to a different group, that's your BizTalk group now. We'll train you up. Best of luck. Because we'll support the inbounds. You support the outbounds. Because you could do that if you think about it from a project, a solution, or a program perspective. Next slide. All right. Now, I would love to hear any questions you have and have any dialogue with you guys. We did run through a lot of content, so I do understand that. But go ahead. So, when we built our platform, we made a simple decision. Any system sending data to BizTalk has to be its own application. Reason being is because there's going to be specific rules that are going to be requisite to that that might not be applicable to others. And to be honest, I'm lazy. I don't want to sit there and try and figure out how I'm going to code some multi-method thing to happen. So for example, we facilitate Meditech. Meditech, for every message type, has a unique application. For every receiving system getting Meditech, it has a receiving application. That way, if vendor X says, I need something changed in a pipeline or an orchestration, I don't have to check with every other vendor in the universe. I can implement it quickly, I can deploy it quickly, I can test it quickly, and I can get those changes out there even quicker. Did that help answer your question? Right, so think of it in terms of HL7. What is the one thing the HL7 adapter requires? When you do HL7 messaging, it's a very specific message-driven product. You're doing ADTs. Everybody knows there's 60-plus ADT events, but you don't want to maintain 60 structures. I'll tell you right now, that's silly. We've had to build pipelines in that basically trick BizTalk to say it's one event coming in, disassembler or assembler happens, message moves through the engine, right? You can argue about whether that's right, wrong, or how it was built. Reality is, that's the way it is today. That's what we coded for. That's one of the reasons why we did that, because I can quickly enable applications. I effectively can move code all over the place in the background. HL7 raw message. Right, so can you go back to the processing? You're absolutely right. So what we do is we actually deal with the real message. We don't deal with the XML message when it sends to MSMQ. The other thing we do that we don't show here is we build an enterprise services model where that message effectively goes to a statistical storage point that we have that takes all those messages and it processes each message twice. We don't count those in our volume, but we have to do some level of auditing just to know what was sent by facility, by data type, date, time, hour. And we can go pretty deep into the message. But yeah, it's all raw data. We don't do anything with XML. Yes, sir. We store everything in a local drive. No. Don't laugh. That happened once. No, seriously, and it was my mistake. If you ever know anything about TFS, always make sure you have a drive defined. But what we do is every application is an autonomous unit, which means it has schemas defined for it. It has a namespace defined for it. It has specific things defined for it. So when you say to me, oh, let's talk about Epic. I love talking about the topic, but immediately my mind goes, okay, that's the Epic schemas, and this is the namespace, and this is how their structures are. So again, it's an act of keeping everything separate for quick. Now, it's not easy to do up front, but let's be clear. We built all of our Meditech interfaces inbound, processed all of them, got ourselves through a QA, right? Did performance testing. So 24 applications to build the foundation for the platform. How long does anybody think that took with three people? Yes, just humor me. A year, 3 months, three people. And it wasn't we killed ourselves 24/7. We came up with a model that worked. We understood how the HL7 accelerator worked and where its flaws were. And we said, it's 45 minutes of heck, we're going. And we're going to, because the only way you're going to get there is to see if this model would work. And it worked. So 6 months out of the gate, when we started BizTalk, we were already pushing 2.5-3 million messages? Yeah. HL7?
Just over 3 million.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
A couple of questions. How did you handle the HL7 discrepancies? So one system sending to the one receiving.
That's a great question. Everything in the engine, we made a conscious decision. Everything in the engine got a free uplift to 251. Didn't matter. We didn't care. Everything went to 251. So we had 2.1, we had 2.3, we had 2.3.1, Everything went up to 251. We pass it through our pipeline, through the disassembler. It validated, and we turn all the data point validation off, but it validated that message structure at that level. We would do the work in an orchestration or on a pipeline side and bust that message down to the appropriate version that they had. Now, in the next release, we're looking at automating that and potentially putting, you know, less hard code and more dynamic code in place for that. Go ahead. Yeah, that's useless in this case. Because all you do, well, here, and don't take anybody take that the wrong way, because I realize when Alan talks, it can be painful. But the HL7 auditing database is one of those things that tells you you had something happen. That's awesome. Great. But it doesn't tell you what application did it, what anything other than time. So when you're pumping a million messages through and you're looking at the event viewer, do you know how much fun it is to figure out if you got an ACK or a NACK for a message? It's not. And that's why we turned it off. I mean, seriously, that's why we turned it off. Because we're, and that's also the reason that we went to the enterprise services route. Because internally, we've exposed services that will tell us if we've got messages. We can correlate at a level internally in BizTalk. It says I got one, but I didn't get a receiving application that says they got an acknowledgement for it. Right? So, yes, sir. Everything is in one data center, sir. Yes, sir. Unless there's a serious HL7 problem, and we've put in almost enough controls in to catch those, we have not had a situation where 2.5 or 3. Now, mind you, BizTalk will slow down. That's kind of your leading indicator, right? It's kind of like, hey, I'm driving along the freeway, I'm doing 60, and why is my car slowing down? That's kind of odd. But it's never halted, it's never failed. And again, we don't have eyes on the system 24/7 with people sitting there clicking a button. You know, we very much let the system process and play, and Microsoft will tell you we had a very serious debate about that mindset when we went into this. Yes, sir? Man, we hit throttling all over the darn place. No, I'm being, that's yes. Why I said understanding, tuning, and throttling is so important, because our first thing we did, we keyed it up. Everybody knows this. We started all the engines, and all of a sudden, where the hell did the system go? Everything halted. Yep. We had a room full of people, and we're trying to scramble, figuring out, okay, now all the servers are offline. Oh, this is not getting good at all. So we had to, and like I said, that's a lesson learned. You have to go back and understand tuning and throttling. You have to understand what it means. I will tell you now, we have 4 different, what we call adapter tuning configurations that we use, SQL, file-based, HL7, and the generic other. And I will also tell you that for every HL7 connection, we have absolutely disabled throttling. There's no throttling on, we have do not override, and it just, it runs. Because, as everybody knows, throttling is not bad in BizTalk. When you throttle too much, it's god-awful. So it's a balancing act. That help answer your question? But we hit it with all the adapters at various points, various message volumes, various scenarios. Yes, sir. What would we? I'm sorry? Right. Yep. So we've had a recent, I think I can answer your question. We had a recent situation where I had hand surgery, carpal tunnel. Thank you, BizTalk. both hands done at the same time. I got a call, and it was good because I was half drugged. And I said, "Oh, BizTalk is not performing. We're sorry for calling you. Now let's get to the fun. BizTalk isn't performing." We're on the phone with Microsoft. We had a situation happen where we got, in several hours over several days, 1.6 million HL7 transactions in, I think, a 3 or 4 hour period, 2 to 3 times. What happened is, as everyone knows, because HL7 is multi-part messages, your spool file, your fragments, your tables just grow. And we basically had to stop BizTalk from processing and allow those to manually clean up. Again, no loss of messages, but the impact was such that it was, we realized we had to have tighter monitors on those throttling conditions. So we've been running, and I don't disagree. So I don't want to come across, I disagree. We've been running for a year. We just passed our 1 year anniversary with the platform. I think it was 2 days ago. We've run into throttling conditions, I would say 6 or 8 major times. As we've gone through them, the platform, we've continued to get better at the throttling. That's why I said you must understand it. And we have not hit those same conditions. And with the configuration, what we have found is that by turning that with HL7, and by allowing that product, because you got to remember, a great portion of our messages are HL7, MSMQ, outbound. So within that paradigm, we have not hit that situation. Now, I will tell you, that's why we have a different configuration for our SQL Server, where we actually have set up resource-based throttling and also rate-based throttling because of that on the SQL side. And that has prevented us from having significant issues. But again, it's that balancing act of how many times is the engine going to throttle before you have a even bigger problem. Because we've run into situations mm-hmm. where the messaging engine, you can actually run a PS Diag, and he's sat there stalled for several hours because we basically got to a condition of, I believe, over throttling, where the engine said, I'm going to stop. You restart things, everything starts flowing as new. That help answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, sir. In BizTalk? So from a third-party component perspective, I don't believe we would have been as successful as we were without the deployment framework and the solution framework. I'm not sure of a third one that I would go with, because we stuck to those two pretty intrinsically. We don't have any third-party adapters or any third-party software that from any partner that runs in BizTalk. We just haven't done that yet. Not saying it's not going to happen, but we just have not done that yet. Exactly. Exactly. And I would say the other thing to understand is that how are you going to performance test when you do it? Because a lot of people have a performance test notion of, I'm just going to hit the living tar out of a system and see what it can do. I would tell you in BizTalk, take that a step back and realize that's one good test, but the best test for BizTalk is have it process a bunch of data and then have it stop. Then have everything stop on the outside and then fire it back up and see where you end up. You could end up in happy land, you might not, but that is a true performance test for BizTalk. And by the way, that wasn't one we started with.
No, that was not.
No, we started with the one, let's just see how fast BizTalk can go. Nobody told us the system would do 2 messages a second on the other side. Yes, sir. Good point. So when we started out, I said, you know, the easiest thing for us to do is identify trading partners, because that makes logical sense, except when you think about it. And we did that. And then all of a sudden, I realized that we have a scenario where we have multiple facilities inside of the same application that share. And I'm not that level of expert. Nobody said, oh, by the way, guess what? Giggle time. That's going to happen. So what would happen inside the engine, and I'm getting through the whole scenario, is that you get to a point, and all of a sudden, BizTalk would just not process anything. Because if you apply certain fixes and patches, the whole, I'm going to write the message to the message box and only acknowledge it when the message goes into the message box, is removed. So you basically are sitting in an iron wall where BizTalk has said to itself, I don't know who this trading partner is, I'm not going to process the data, and you leave your external interface engine hanging out there. So what we've had to do in those situations is configure the trading partners by facility, realistically, and if I ever had to do it again, I would configure it by the application, do it quick and dirty, and on the other side of the pipeline, put the true value in so that the external systems would know what they were. But that way, instead of having 160 to 300 trading partners, I'd have like five. Yes, sir. No, that's a great question. Initially, what we did is we said, we are going to have a host instance for every message type for every application. That sounds great. But then you realize how many of those you need, and it becomes awful. And then even more you realize beyond that is, okay, not only do I have that problem, but let's go through a common scenario in healthcare. If I have a host instance and I put ADTs, orders, and results on the same host instance, what happens when I have 100,000 messages bound to that host instance? Keyword is bound. Nothing is happening until the others process through because it is a singleton port. So we had to come up with a balance by message type, by a grouping that would allow us to alleviate that pressure. So we don't have one message, one host instance per message type. We have one host instance per multiple message type grouping. So you'll have ADT, ORU, and ORMs. We'll have RDEs and MDMs in another host instance by receiving application. And that way, yes, the BizTalk can slow down, and it has and it will, but at least it's on the outbound side, and we're allowing that to process through. Someone had their, yes, sir. I'm sorry? Are you implementing Obamacare or something?
Yeah,
okay.
So I see a real change in what you're using with BizTalk to start solving some of those problems. We're using on the back side a data warehouse solution, and then we're using a lot of analysis out of the back end that I see you guiding through BizTalk to help with that. Right? So first, we're using as a data warehouse solution for statistics, and then second, for your hospital, not BizTalk, but for your hospital. And then second is what's guiding your direction to help get BizTalk
Very good question.
Okay, that's a big old question. Well, let's start at the beginning. I think your first question was focused on what are we using for our data warehouse?
Yep.
That's Teradata as a platform. So everything goes into Teradata that's a data warehouse component. Now keep in mind, we also at HCA, I mean, one of the things we always do, again, tens of thousands by tens of millions, we have a giant SQL Server infrastructure as well. So a lot of stuff does go to SQL for processing, but Teradata really is our data warehouse. It's our corporately defined one, phenomenal product, runs well. I think your second product was around guiding BizTalk to do transactional. Yes. So I have the coolest job in the world, right? And I tell everybody this because I get to do two things. First off, I get to do the thing I love every day. But the second thing is I get to play in a playground every day too, right? Who wouldn't love that? And I get to do it with technology. And one of the things we do at HCA that I pride myself on is enterprise architecture, which I'm a member of. I'm the enterprise integration architect for HCA. We always say, how can we work with the business to solve a problem they have today? And then let's not just solve the problem today, but let's think about what we're going to do tomorrow, right? So what we're thinking about is not just today with our volume, but what else tomorrow? Am I positioned so when that event comes through, I can do other stuff, right? Because I don't want to have to go back to the well and define another connection to go to another endpoint because the 80s called. They want that mindset back. They want that process back. What you have is you've already got the data moving through the system. So why would I need to do the same thing again? If I know that I can connect to Meditech and use a third-party driver or Epic and say, hey, I have an account number, I have an incident of care, I need to know some information that's not in the HL7, and Epic says or Meditech says, yeah, you can go do that, why would I not do that? Now I don't have an HL7 message anymore. I've got a business service platform that I used HL7 messages to drive, right? Now, your other thing was about auditing, I think it was. Yep. So at HCA, we have clinical services, which runs our clinical service operations, and then we have our business IT side. They define what we want, we come up with the solutions, and what we try and do is not just build the solution that they want, but also give us enough for the future with what we know is coming. So when someone says, hey, MU2 is coming, it wasn't about let's build something to make sure that we could do that. It's let's build something to make sure we can hit that, but also business enable ourselves for the future with the right technology, the right platform. And when somebody says, oh, by the way, when that message flows through, I want you to ping Mir Space Station and bounce it back, we're business able and ready to do that from a context perspective, right? Did I answer your question? Yes, sir. I'm sorry? No. We have, if you think about our systems and our applications, the way we're designed, we have roughly 800 trading partners. However, if I had it to do again, understanding what I said about HL7 and what the trading partner is and how I could do things in the pipeline a little more aggressively, I would only have five.
So do you define a 251 schema inside this
talk,
regardless of what
this is? No. So by application, by message type, we define the schemas at a 251 level, and we've done that for about a year now. So for every application, for every vendor, so if we talk about the Epics, the Meditechs, the ECWs of the world that we support, there's roughly five inbound applications that support them and any number of outbound applications that will take the data from them. That kind of help explain? So what we do, and I know we got to go here in a second, but what we try and do very quick is a quick and dirty healthcare trick, because what makes a message 251 versus 21? MSH header and fields in the message, right? That's it. So we can apply those quick and dirty tricks, uplift the message, and guess what? I don't have to have a conversation with the vendor. And when the vendor decides to start sending stuff there, it's not going to blow up because all my if conditional logic is just going to say, well, there's already something there, so I'm out, I'm good. I'm sorry? You but list all that, I don't understand that. In our scenario, the way we've turned off a lot of the functions inside of the HL7 adapter, which I'd encourage everyone to do because you don't really want to do table validation inside of HL7, you don't have to do that as long as you pass bar with nothing in between it. Make sure you do that when you do a stream reader. Do not pass it with the default because you'll end up with a null. Things will blow up and then you're going to get yelled at. That happened to me. Just so, take a message. I think we're...
Time?
Time.
So I hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you so much.